Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian.
This podcast was created to provide you, our heroes, with new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
This episode is brought to you by our generous Patreon donors. If you'd like to support us, head on over to our website, and there's a link that'll take you directly to our Patreon account, and you get lots of cool freebies, behind-the-scenes pictures and video, watch the show live, all that good stuff.
Oh, technical.
Yeah. While you're over there at CritAcademy.com, make sure to subscribe to our show, where we can help you on your future adventures, and as well as you'll be submitted to win really cool prizes that we give out each and every week.
And on top of all that, you'll find links to our fellowship members as well, and there's lots of good stuff there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The guys over at D&D Character Lab, they build these awesome characters, very well thought out, in-depth characters, and then they match them in a battle of wits and some special criteria, and it's really fun to listen to.
Indeed.
Additionally, you can check out Interparty Conflict. Their show's all about answering your questions, and they are very experienced and absolutely amazing people and got great voice to listen to. Also, check out our sponsors there as well. Thank you for joining us today here at the Crit Academy of Studios, where everything's made up and your roles don't matter.
Yep, that's right. Your roles are like a druid that can't wild shape. Which might be a not quite so subtle foreshadowing for our topic for today.
Oh, yeah? We like to start every episode off with a really a good, upbeat vibe, and the best way to do that is to give away cool stuff.
Each episode, we will draw one lucky subscriber's name, and they will win the 5-star rated adventure, Banquet of the Damned, Compliments of Goblin Stone. Goblin Stone is a community project for D&D fans based out of the UK. They aim to be a place where you can team up with professionals to turn your ideas into high-quality products and give every fan a chance to get published. Be sure to head over to www.goblinstone.com or you can check out our fellowship link on our website, www.critacademy.com.
And today our lucky winner is Earthafine.
That's pretty good.
Or Earthafine, Earthafane, who knows?
Congratulations, Earthafane. If you enjoy the adventure, please let us know, let Goblinstone know, leave them an awesome review so that they can improve their product next time. So today we got a really great show for you today. We're going to be discussing Xanathar's Guide to Everything, the Druid, and we're going to break down the we're going to do our class analysis on the Druid. Really excited for that. We have a great question in our Let's Talk About Blank segment from listener Jeremy. And additionally to that, we have our Unearthed Tips and Tricks. I'm really excited about the encounter concept. We've talked about it before. I left it kind of vague in the descriptions because I think a lot of good conversation is going to come from just what it is. So
probably.
So we'll see how that goes. But before all that, we have In the Realm. Ian?
Justin, what's going on in your realm?
Not a whole lot. We played Zombicide this weekend. That was really cool.
And that was just a tutorial.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited, actually, now that I know what's going on, to really jump into it head first.
And you saw the picture that I posted, like, no. Here's what really happens in most games.
Like, it looked like there's 100 little minis on there.
You're not wrong.
So that was a whole lot of fun. I also rang bells for the Salvation Army yesterday with my mentoree, so that was fun.
Bring out your dad!
That's how I felt. He kept kind of getting a little bit of trouble, wanted to do donuts in one of those little handicap carts. I'm like, no, you can't do that. What about you, Ian? What's going on in your realm?
Well, I just got back from family Christmas over in St. John's that involved the extended family. There was like 4 kinds of stew there for lunch. I was not complaining about that one bit.
I love a good stew.
And for the past couple days, I've been playing PlayerUnknown's Battleground. And
yeah, I saw that.
It's been rather addictive, not going to lie.
It really is.
Just one more game. Okay, just one more game. I do okay when it comes to like stealthing around and surviving and hiding. It's just when I get to actual combat or spotting other players. That's the part where I keep at.
That's where you need like a 32-inch TV like we use here is your monitor. So then you can see every little pixel that just moved. That's a person. That'll do it for In the Realm.
And if our listeners want to hear about other realms, they can discover them through our sponsor, Audible,
where they can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/critacademy, where they have over 180,000 titles to choose from for all of your mobile devices.
Moving on to our Crit Nation feedback, our Let's Talk About Blank segment, we have a question from listener Jeremy Truckmiller.
And it's a pretty good question, actually.
Yep. I have a player that wants to be a dual-class paladin and warlock. Now, he goes on into parentheses and say, has the ability score to do so. I think he means multi-class.
Yeah.
The question is, can Divine Smite and Eldritch Smite, all prerequisites are met, stack? The simple answer to this is yes. If you look at both spells, neither one of them require a bonus action or an action. It just says the only requirement was that you, when you hit a target.
Now, something you do want to keep in mind, though, is the Paladin Smite doesn't allow them to use any spell slot, not just Paladin, any class spell
right,
slot.
There was an errata for that, because in the player's handbook, it actually does say Paladin spell slot.
However, the Warlock Smite must, if you go with the Hexblade, I assume, must use the Warlock spell slots for that, so...
It seems like this may seem like it's unbalanced, because you... but the Smite, the Eldritch Smite only lets you do it up to one time per turn, but the Divine Smite you can ump all your slots into.
And
yes, that's going to make you super powerful.
For a turn. because let's face it, if you do this build as I think you're going to do it, yes, you will hit like a truck. But you will burn through spell slots pretty dang fast.
And you'll be out of oomph. So, I mean, to me, it's the equivalent of, like, the 4th edition had the dailies, where once you can do this just amazing attack, and then you're spent.
But on the bright side, though, Warlocks get your stealth stuff back after a short rest, so...
That is true. But still, I mean, between the Paladin and the Warlock, you already don't have enough... You already have very few spell slots as it is.
But I suppose, if you need to get that one really hard hit in, that would do it.
And that's going to do it. And so, as a DM, I would be prepared to be prepared for this to be an issue where they might wait, save it all up for your big bad.
What? And then comes the Nova damage.
So, thank you so much for submitting your question there, Jeremy. We hope we answer your question. If we didn't, please send us hate mail telling us so. moving on to our third topic, the Xanathar's class analysis, the Druids. Druids are the caretakers of the natural world, and it is said that in time, a Druid becomes the voice of nature, speaking the truth that is too subtle for the general populace to hear. Many who become Druids find that they naturally gravitate towards nature. Its forces, cycles, and movements fill their minds and their spirits with wonder and insight.
And first up on deck here, we have the Circle of Dreams. Pretty interesting archetype, actually, because...
Yeah, it is.
These druids seek to fill the world with dreamy wonder. Their magic mends wounds and brings joy to downcast hearts. In the realms they protect are gleaming, fruitful places where dream and reality blur together, where the wee-wee can find rest.
So this is some Freddy Krueger shit. That's the first thing I thought of when I was reading through this. I was like, this is some Freddy Krueger stuff.
It could be.
The first feature you get when you acquire the when you select the Circle of Dreams is the Balm of the Summer Court.
It's not Southern, y'all.
Whatever. at second level, you become imbued with the blessings of the Summer Court. You are a font of energy that offers respite from injuries. You have a pool of fey energy represented by a number of d6s equal to your druid level. That's pretty cool.
Hell yeah.
And as a bonus action, you can choose one creature you can see within 120 feet of you and spend any number of those dice equal to half your druid level or less. Roll the spent dice and add them together. The target regains a number of hit points equal to the total. The target also regains one temporary hit point for the number of die spent. And of course, you regain these all on a long rest.
May I point out that this archetype gives you Healing Word on steroids?
Yeah, that's what that is.
I am not complaining.
I know, right? Because, you know, Healing Word is already cool because it's one of the fewer, it's got a good range, and yeah, it's a bonus action. This just gets stronger. I mean, it's a D6. What is it, a D4 for the Healing Word?
Yeah. Oh, but wait, there's more, because this is not a spell.
Right. No, it doesn't consume slots.
Right. It does not have the limitation that spells have when you use a bonus action, and you can only use a cantrip afterwards.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that. So yeah, you could cast a powerful spell and still use that.
Yep. Yeah, that's a little rule that most people seem to forget about, and I forgot about for the longest time.
Yeah, actually, one thing that was interesting to me is, and actually, you kind of touched on it, it's a rule people forget about. I actually let the sorcerer break that rule. Because the sorcerer's meta magic, to me, should automatically break that rule. And it's not the rule, even Jeremy said, you shared the link with me, that it's not even, it doesn't yeah, really do nothing.
Yeah, they did implement the rule saying, it's in the balance, but they said, yes, time went by, they realized it was probably not really needed.
Right. So that's a restriction that I apply to everyone else, but I let the meta magic break.
And most people forget this rule even exists, and I think most DMs kind of let it go because it's like, okay, yeah, you're doing all this Nova damage, but you're burning through spell slots that much faster.
Right,
so,
yeah. Yeah, there's a trade-off there. So to me, this is really cool. It's a very potent healing spell, and anytime you can heal as a bonus action, that really makes you... One of the biggest flaws to playing a healer is you constantly feel like you're being... That's all you do.
Yep.
So anytime you can get something that triggers off of a bonus action, that's always nice. To me, because it's called the Summer Court, you know, I kind of envision this like creating a small sun above somebody and then it like shining bright and casting its light over top of somebody.
I kind of picture a druid using his staff as a gavel. Order!
That's funny.
The summer court is now in session.
So that's really cool. I think anytime you get a nice healing spell, it's not a spell. So it doesn't have the other restrictions, which we mentioned, like silence and stuff too, which is pretty cool.
And just like that, I now want to play a druid whose day job is a judge.
That could be a good character concept. Except you would expect it to be like a paladin or something. I'd make it like a rogue. The rogue judge.
To each their own.
Rogue justice.
Wait, rogues can use warhammers, right?
I don't think
Or light hammers. The light hammers.
Maybe.
I think I'd be able to build a rogue that wields hammers. The next feature you get is...
You got the last one.
Oh, excuse me. I am so sorry, Ian. Please, please, go next.
At level 6... The Circle of Dreams druid gains the feature, the Hearth of Moonlight and Shadow. At 6th level, home can be wherever you are. During a short or long rest, you can invoke the shadowy power of the Glooming Court to help guard your respite. At the start of the rest, you touch a point in space, and an invisible 50-foot radius sphere of magic appears, centered on that point. Total cover blocks the sphere. While inside the sphere, you and your allies gain a +5 bonus to Dexterity, Stealth, and Wisdom Perception checks, and any light from open flames in the sphere, such as a campfire or torches, are not visible outside it. The sphere vanishes at the end of the rest, or when you leave it.
Okay, so basically you get a bubble tent.
A pretty awesome one, by
the sounds. It's a bubble tent. The thing that I think is really cool about this is... One of the big giveaways that I like to do is when the players set up camp is their signals. Mm-hmm. There's fire coming out in the middle of a forest. It's going to draw monsters. It's going to draw, you know, creepy bandits and everything. So this is one way to get around that. If you're the DM that likes to throw that stuff at your player, make sure you award them, you know, free sleeps and rests with something like this.
And the +5 to perception for the spot stuff and to stealth to not be seen, that adds up pretty dang fast.
Right, and that's actually a good point. If you think about using this not just as like a way to take a rest, but if you're like on a watchtower, you could cast this right in a watchtower area to be ready for incoming raid or anything like that.
Ooh, 30-foot radius, so...
That's pretty big.
We'll have to be careful with that placement. And at no point does it say that this radius has to be centered on the ground.
Oh, that's interesting. You could hide an entire, like, tree.
And then in my once-a-month Thursday game that I play, in which we basically do in hard mode, what's kind of been a running joke is I play a fighter, which I basically play as a ranger because they're an archer-type character.
Mm-hmm.
But I always have them keep watch/sleep in trees. Well, trance in trees.
Okay.
And they keep making fun of me for it, but I'm like, Yeah, but I'm not the one who got ambushed by wolves those three or four times, because I was up here, so... You learned.
I could see something going into, like, an elven village and having, like, a tree village that's hidden by people constantly casting something like this, right?
Fascinating.
Because it says, when your rest ends. Well, rests don't have to be sleep, right?
No. And...
As far as I understand.
And with elves, it did say in Sage Advice that the... That, yes, they do trance for 4 hours, but they still technically have to long rest for 8 hours.
Right.
Actually, the Sage Advice column was actually kind of funny. Like, well, we wrote this down, but we intended to be this, but we did write this down, so...
They never fixed it, so... that's a pretty cool ability, like I said. To me, it's not just a resting ability, like a watchtower ability. And it's great if you're trying to hide away from people that are looking for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
So... Our next feature you get access to is the Hidden Paths. Starting at 10th level, you can use the hidden magical pathways that some fae use to traverse space in a blink of an eye. As a bonus action on your turn, you can teleport up to 60 feet to an unoccupied space that you can see. Alternatively, you can teleport an ally, a willing creature, up to 30 feet that you touch. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your wisdom modifier, and you regain it all when you finish a long rest. Now, this is... Anytime you can teleport, I'm a fan. I love teleporting.
I love teleporting.
Get out of grapples, get out of traps, get out of dodge, get out of all these different scenarios. But what makes this even cooler is that you can teleport somebody else.
Poke.
I mean, can you imagine just, like, I envision the druid and the barbarian having a good teamwork, and the barbarian say, I rage, and stomp, 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 and he runs in, and he runs past the druid, and the druid has his teleport action readied,
poke.
And boom, and then the druid come, or the barbarian comes flying out behind the enemy and ambushing him from behind.
Leroy!
Very much like, did you watch Days of Future Past?
Yeah.
Where the girl can make the one guy teleport?
Yeah.
That's what I envision with. I don't think I would ever use this on myself. I would just like start dropping big guys from the ceiling.
Ooh. Rogues and their stealth checks.
Ooh. Assassin rogue.
Yeah.
Just drop right from above. Oh, man. Might take a little bit of fall damage, but I think it'd be worth it.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. That would definitely make getting through doors and stuff like that a lot easier.
Although it does say that a spot you can see.
Well, there's windows. Right?
Sometimes.
Or, you know, sometimes. Yeah, if the keyholes, you peek through the keyhole and then touch somebody, boop, and he's on the other side. Or grab a little crank and like a corkscrew and drill yourself a hole and boop, teleport right inside. That's totally what I'd be doing with this thing.
And the next feature that the Circle of Dreams gains is the Walker in Dreams, where at 14th level, the magic of the Feywild grants you the ability to travel mentally or physically through dreamlands. When you finish a short rest, you can cast one of the following spells without expending a spell slot or requiring material components.
That's awesome.
Dream, with you as a messenger, scrying, or teleportation circle. And this use of teleportation circle is special. Rather than opening a portal to a permanent teleportation circle, it opens a portal to the last location where you have finished a long rest on your current plane of existence. If you have not taken a long rest on your current plane, the spell fails, but is not wasted. And once you use this feature, you can't use it again until you finish a long rest.
That's pretty cool.
And back to, hey, anytime you can teleport, that's fine by me.
What I think is most interesting about this ability is the fact that it gives you access to the dream, which you get back on a short rest. Now, if you don't know what dream lets you do, it lets you enter the dreams of people, and you can alter their perceptions and everything they see. So, to me, I would use this for probably evil purposes.
Freddy Krueger.
Sending Freddy Krueger, first of all, but more importantly, sending paranoid like visions, false visions to... to somebody like an emperor or a noble, and start torturing them in their dreams every night, and then finally once you've set up this big, they keep reiterating and seeing the same dream over and over and over, you approach them at some point as a person saying, I've had a vision, and describing the same vision. Now, they're going to think it's something important.
And scrying, well, it's always good to scout ahead.
And you can find people with scrying too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just find where they're at.
I believe so.
Pro tip, have your villains scry the players.
Oh,
that'll piss them off. How do they know we were coming? You didn't stop yourselves from being scryed. And of course, teleportation circle is always cool, though that one has some unique limitations. So
yep.
Once again, though, the Freddy Krueger thing, the Walker in the Dreams, that is just awesome to me, and I would love to do that. Just giving my allies nightmares.
Okay, the troll features made me think of when a friend of mine mentioned that in a Star Wars game they played, that when the player. One player character who had force abilities died, and he then brought up to the DM, like, hey, can I come back as a force spirit? Yeah, sure, I don't see why not. Yeah, he spent most of the time being a force spirit trolling the other players that let him die. So just like, for example, let's say somebody was trying to disarm our bomb. Hey! 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 Am I being distracting? Hey! 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 Hey, look! It's my butt!
That's funny. I'd like to point out, this is the second druid thing that shows pictures of animals in it, but druids still can't summon animals as far as I know. Right? They get the conjure animal spell, right? But they don't have like a partner.
They do not by default get an animal familiar.
That's too bad. That's the second picture that's actually had like animals in it. And it's cute little puppy dogs, by the way.
I think it's just so much of a stereotype for the class at this point that people, it's just what's burning their heads.
Yeah, I would agree. Alrighty. So that does it for the Circle of Dreams. Once again, that's some Freddy Krueger stuff and very shamanistic type stuff. Once again, use it for evil and good, I suppose.
And now think about Scary Terry from Rick and Morty.
I have not actually watched Rick and Morty. I need to get on that.
But Scary Terry is kind of their parody. They had one episode of Freddy Krueger, which was also the Inception episode. Which, if you think about it, is not a bad combination.
Right. So the next thing we have is the Circle of the Shepherd. These druids recognize that all living things play a role in the natural world. Yet, they focus on protecting animals and fey creatures that have difficulty defending themselves. So they're the animal lover. I mean, now, generally speaking, all druids are kind of are attuned to nature, but not necessarily like...
They're all tree huggers.
Well, yeah, but they don't have to be. But this one's specifically designed with that kind of concept, that concept in mind. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
The first feature you get access to, this to me is a really cool feature. Reminds me very much of the barbarian. So the first thing you get access to is Speech of the Woods.
At second level, you gain Speech of the Woods, where you can converse with beasts and many fae. You learn to speak, read, and write Sylvan, and in addition... Beasts can understand your speech, and you gain the ability to decipher their noises and motions. Most beasts lack the intelligence to convey or understand sophisticated concepts, but a friendly beast could relay what it has seen or heard in the recent past. This ability does not grant you friendship to beasts, though you can combine this ability with gifts to curry favor to them. Okay, first off, why can't every druid do this in the first place?
Do it? Yeah, well, that's what animal handling is, right?
No! It's not.
Well, not talking to them, but they get like access to like speak. You can get the spells speak with animals.
Yeah, spell, but not a class feature. This is what I think every Jewish should be able to do in the first place. So I'm happy to see this.
Okay, I can see that. I like that, especially makes it clear that they don't that they're not super sophisticated, and so that it's more of a. Like maybe like a telepathic like imaging the way they convey what they think, because everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to talk with animals and they talk. Well, no, that's not really what happens. They convey an idea or a concept or a piece of knowledge without actually talking.
The mailman has came by some time ago. Squirrel.
Well, I don't even think that, like, to me, I always envisioned it like, telepathic images being like sent to you of what the person, the creature has seen, or a smell or something like that. But what have you? Still pretty cool. I can understand. I kind of agree with you now that I read this. That probably feels like it should be like a default feature, even though certain spells are supposed to kind of handle that.
Shoot, a barbarian can do this as a ritual.
Yeah, yeah.
When a barbarian can do something that you
a druid can't.
There's something wrong here.
Right. So that's a pretty cool one. Nothing too fancy, but it saves spell slots, so you don't got to use Speak with Animals anymore. Additionally, at level 2, you get access to Spirit Totem. You can call forth nature spirits to influence the world around you. As a bonus action, you can magically summon an incorporeal spirit to a point that you can see within range.
50 feet.
The spirit creates an aura in a 30-foot radius around that point. It counts as neither a creature or an object, though it has a spectral appearance of the creature it represents. So as a bonus action, you can move, and additionally, as a bonus action, you can move it up to 60 feet. And the spirit persists for 1 minute.
Or until you're incapacitated.
Well, that's kind of understood, though, but okay. And once you use this feature, you can regain it at a short or long rest. So you get access to 3 different totem choices, spirit creatures. The first one is the bear spirit.
For those of you from Chicago.
First of all, this reminds me of like the shaman totems from World of Warcraft, where you drop a little totem and it has a ability that emanates a certain range around it.
Ooga chaga.
Wachaga chaga. The bear spirit grants you and your allies its might and endurance. Each creature of your choice in the aura when the spirit appears gains temporary hit points equal to 5 plus your druid level. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
That's an AoE healing buffer. In addition, you and your allies gain advantage on strength checks and strength saving throws while in the air. Ooh. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can see if you manipulate it correctly, it's like that temporary hit points won't go away, and if they lose it, they can get it back.
Yeah, I kind of envision this as a rally cry. As you summon this beer, it does this roar, and it roars really loud and rears up, and then you see the roar reverberating through the area and kind of rallying all the players. Right, and they all roar back, maybe. Who knows?
For any druid played by Mike Dicka.
I like it. I love anytime we talk about like spirit stuff, because to me, anytime the spirits are involved, they're like guardians that are protecting you or surrounding you and are there to defend you. At least that's always my take on it.
And one other option you can get is the hawk spirit, where the hawk is a consummate hunter, aiding you and your allies with this keen sight. When a creature makes an attack roll against a target in the spirit's aura, you can use your reaction to grant advantage to that attack roll. In addition, you and your allies have an advantage on wisdom perception checks while in the aura. That's pretty good.
That is awesome. Once again, this is a very powerful spot ability and preventing ambushes, right?
And advantage to attack.
That's always nice, right?
Yeah.
Wow, oh, that is really cool. Consummate.
Consummate, not consummate, consummate.
Whatever. I think it's... Are you sure it's not consummate?
Consummate.
That's pretty much the help action as a reaction. That's still kind of cool.
That is kind of cool.
How do you envision that working with this totem?
You can do it!
Is the totem maybe, like, guiding their strike? Maybe, like, if I'm swinging a great axe, the hawk surrounds my blade and kind of guides it to its target, maybe?
I can get beyond that.
Oh, sad face. I'm sorry, Joel. It's always terrible when D&D gets canceled.
Indeed. Although the one time we canceled one of our Friday games, I was not heartbroken because I was not getting any sleep that week. So I'm like, yes!
Sometimes it happens. The next spirit is the unicorn spirit. Somebody's going to look fabulous. The unicorn spirit lends its protection to those nearby. You and your allies gain advantage on all ability checks made to detect creatures in the spirit's aura. In addition, if you cast a spell using a spell slot that restores hit points to any creature inside or outside the aura, each creature of your choice in the aura also regains hit points. Whoa. Equal to your druid level. So
nice.
If you heal, we all get healed.
Yep.
Oh, that is cool. That's like free AoE healing, man. And that's just for a bonus action. I mean, that doesn't require any resources from the druid at all. Wow, that's amazing. So, like, I just...
Wait, that's not what I read.
Wait, what?
Guys, keep in mind, it doesn't heal everybody. It's when you use a spell slot to heal a creature.
Yeah, it says, in addition...
Right.
If you cast a spell using a spell slot that restores hit points to any creature inside or outside the aura... Each creature of your choice in the aura also regains hit points.
Oh, I read it wrong.
So if I heal you with Healing Word, they all get healed too.
Night. Yep.
I kind of envision this as the spiritual unicorn totem just kind of rearing and its horn starting to glow and send out like rainbows to everybody. Like pew 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 pew. That's cool.
And next up we have the Mighty Summoner feature. And at level 6, beasts and fae that you conjure are more resilient than normal. Any beast or fae summoned or created by a spell that you cast gains the following benefits. They appear with more hit points than normal, with 2 extra hit points per hit die it has. Nice. And damage from its natural weapons is considered magical for the purpose of overcoming immunity and resistance to non-magical attacks and damage. That's pretty good too.
So this is one of the few abilities in the game that reinforces other creatures, right? Like beasties, right? Is yep. there? Because I can't really think of any other ones right offhand other than like the enlarge and enlarge and reduce spell. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Outside of that, there's not very. I don't recall there being very many. I could be mistaken. I don't memorize the entire book, but
there is a lot to memorize.
But this is just by summoning them, they get stronger. Additional hit dice is awesome. And magical weapons, which at higher levels, can be a real challenge when you summon little beasties to attack when everything has resistance.
I also think you should keep this ability in mind, given the next couple features. Just saying.
Yeah, good point. So the way I kind of envision this, imagine... summoning forth like a rat, and then this kind of creating like a spectral dire rat over top of them, so they look bigger than they are. You know what I mean? It's kind of reinforcing them. Or you could go a more physical route where the little rat kind of looks like Rattata from Pokemon, and then all of a sudden grows a little bit and looks like the Raticate. You know, make them a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger.
That'd be kind
of
cool.
Yeah, I'm more of the spiritual specter thing. I'm more of like a bigger version. Like, have you seen Legends of Tomorrow?
Legends of Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The girl with the spirit totem. What's her name?
I know it. What is it? Crap.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. Yeah. What is her name?
I know this. That's the worst part.
Yeah, anyways. She has a spirit totem, and these, like, spectral animals appear around her. I would love to see something like that with your little tiny minions. They just run around, and a big version of them kind of roars and bellows and helps you attack.
I can also picture glowing magical runes appearing on them when you summon them.
Ooh, that could be cool. Just kind of showing them that they're kind of reinforced and stronger.
Oh, cool. Thank you, Joan. Vixen.
Oh, Vixen. Yes, thank you. Okay, yeah. Okay.
It's like, I know it. I just can't think of it right now because my brain's shut.
Yeah, so, yeah, Vixen does that. And that's kind of, with this spectral stuff, that's kind of how I envision a lot of the reinforcement techniques working, especially that. So at level 10, you get access to Guardian Spirit. Your spirit totem safeguards the beasts and fae you call forth with your magic. When a beast or fae that you summoned or created with a spell ends its turn in your spirit totem aura, that creature regains a number of hit points equal to half your druid level. AoE healing for your minions? Hell yeah.
That's a win.
Now, for those of you who don't know, there's a very potent spell called, is it Conjure Woodland Creatures? It's amazing. You can conjure a bunch of little creatures or a few big creatures. Now, traditionally, you're not supposed to be able to pick what they are. You just say, I want a bunch of little ones, and maybe the DM will pick a bunch of little pixies, and they'll come and help you or what have you. But something like this, allowing them to be able to heal and regenerate, you can quickly overwhelm your enemies.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Because unlike some previous editions, the lower level creatures, even at higher levels, can still, because of action economy, really cause quite the hampering of the enemy.
And you get this at level 10, so that's 5 HP right there.
Yeah, for sure. So that's cool. I've always wanted to play a pure summoner class. I tried to build one once, and it went eh. It wasn't great. This looks like it's much better designed for that. Indeed. So I might give it a shot, because I love like summoner builds.
All right, and last but not least, we have the Faithful Summons feature. Starting at 14th level, the nature spirits you commune with protect you when you are at your most defenseless. If you're reduced to 0 hit point or are incapacitated against your will, you immediately gain the benefits of conjure animals as if you're using it as a 9th level spell slot. It summons 4 beasts of your choice that are challenge rating 2 or lower. The conjured beasts appear within 20 feet of you. If they receive no commands from you, they protect you from harm and attack your foes.
The spell lasts for 1 hour, requiring no concentration or until you dismiss it. No action required.
Okay.
And you can't use it until a long rest.
So, when you're reduced to zero, spirit animals come to you as if it was cast in a ninth level spell slot. That's amazing.
That is nice.
Because how many abilities in the game take effect and are functional when you're unconscious?
Not very many.
Can you think of any?
Not off the top of my head.
I mean, I feel like any most abilities, once you're knocked unconscious, that's it. There's nothing. But yet, here we have a feature that triggers specifically when you're knocked unconscious. Now,
I guess it's the barbarian feature or the half-orcs.
Well, that stops them, but that doesn't stop once they're unconscious.
But them being knocked unconscious is what triggers it and keeps them conscious.
Oh, that to me is just awesome. Jome asks if the druid barbarian is your favorite class.
You have proposed it before.
It is it's not my favorite class. It's definitely one of the ones that I have the most fun with, only because I love to choke a bitch. And with the druid and barbarian, I can do that almost indefinitely. And I like to play, would you agree that I like to play unorthodox type concepts?
That's playing madly.
I always try to find and be as creative as I can. I never go for optimization just because I find that everyone else is always trying to do that. So what can I do differently to bring to the game? And I find with the shape shifting and the druid and the barbarian strength, I can get far more creative than I ever could with some of the other stuff, which is why the wizard is actually my favorite class.
And to be fair, the druid barbarian is kind of a fun combo, because, shoot, at level 3, with 2 levels of druid and 1 druid, the barbarian's like, mm-hmm. I transform into a brown bear and rage.
Yeah, and that's actually a combination that I stumbled up across on accident. I didn't even go looking for that. I was like, oh, I can shapeshift into a bear at level 2, right, which is a large creature. And I can get half damage if I'm raging when I turn into one, because it stays. I'm going to try that. And it turned out being very effective grappler.
And just so we are clear also as well, it mentions up to 4 challenging to animals. We are talking polar bear, which is above brown bear, may right. I add. We are talking giant constrictor snake, giant elk.
Giant things that fly.
Rhinoceros.
That's fun.
Allosaurus.
Dinosaurs, nice.
Yeah.
That's a big deal to be able to just be unconscious and still have control over some stuff going on. Now, once again, are these? It says they're conjured animals, yep. But to follow with the spirit thing, I would probably flavor it as they're being spirit animals, not actual animals. So like maybe like spirit animals rise from my body or something that to defend my lifeless corpse. So,
shoot, do I have the mouse manual hand? I'm going to check out one of these creatures right now.
So that does it for the druids circles. The one thing I did want to touch on that's not in the notes is the learning beast shapes. Something that's always come up is, well, what do I know? What can I turn into? Now, on my end, I've always just said, okay, here's the 3 creatures you turn into. And I would gradually, as kind of like a reward, I would give them new ones. Like, I would specifically go out of my way. Like, I didn't let my first druid turn into a brown bear to level 3. That was her 3rd level reward. So instead of getting at level 2, she was turning into wolves and panthers. And then when she leveled up, I said, I had him fight a bear. And I said, you can turn into this now. And in fact, she turned into it in mid-fight with a bear. So it was bear-on-bear action, which was pretty cool. The Xanthar's Guide actually gives you a little bit of a guide of when to learn new stuff and what you've seen up to that point based on like your level and stuff, and kind of gives you a little bit of jumping off point. Personally, as a DM, I've always just picked a few and then just fed it to them as a kind of a reward.
Yeah, that's one option.
But they do have some really good tables that give you some great ideas of things they can turn into and kind of things that they would know.
Based off the environment they're from, yeah, and what a surprise, the forest and the grasslands have the most options.
right. So there's some pretty cool stuff on there. I love the idea that you can turn into a woolly mammoth. I just think that's awesome. I just want everyone to call me Woolly.
Woolly.
Oops.
Let's try. I'm calling you Snuffy.
Snuffleupagus. So that does it for our main topic today. Before we move on to our 4th and final segment, our Unearth Tips and Tricks, we have another prize to give away. Compliments of our sponsors.
Each episode, we will draw another lucky subscriber's name, and they will win the best-selling adventure, The Claws of Madness, Compliments of Loresmith. Lawsmith is a small indie team of creative artists who remember exploring the realms together with friends, finding incredible places, and meeting colorful characters along the way. They set out to deliver an experience that sparks those lasting impressions that pushed them to create their first standalone adventure, The Claws of Madness. This best-selling adventure is one that you don't want to miss.
And, well, what do you know? Today's winner is Lee Pierce 90. Gee, I wonder who that is!
Congratulations, Lee. You know, he's as much of a supporter, he's been to the show, he hadn't won anything yet.
Huh.
At least that I could find. I didn't have no comments for it, so maybe. I make mistakes, but... So congratulations, Lee. You've won it. And it's about time, since he done a lot of work for us pro bono.
No kidding. Lee Pierce 90. Does that mean he's born in 1990?
I don't know, maybe.
That means he's younger than me.
So congratulations, Lee. You earned it, boy.
And next up we get our fourth segment, Unearthed Tips and Tricks.
Okay. So I was thinking of character concepts for the game I want to run with Joe. And somehow, I don't know how I haven't ever thought of this, but do you ever watch...
No.
Oh, come on.
I don't know what you're talking about, but no.
Damn it. It's the stupid guy that pimps himself out. Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Oh, yeah, definitely no.
In Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo, he dates this girl who's got narcolepsy. So they're sitting at dinner, and she just, boom, her face falls in. So I thought, how hilarious would it be to have, like, a barbarian character who charges into battle at full speed and then halfway through falls asleep and tumbles and rolls up to the person? So our character concept is the narco napper. Basically, they randomly fall asleep at inopportune times. Now, I give the idea of the barbarian, but... It could just as easily be like a person in the middle of a serious diplomatic conversation and then like, yes, yeah, sir, let me tell you.
Yep, they fell asleep during combat, conversations, or climbing. Yeah, that would not usually end very well.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of funny scenarios can you see arising from that?
Yep. All right, this arm-wrestling contest begins.
What if we're just talking druid? So what if a druid is starting to shapeshift and falls asleep halfway through? That's where the myths and the legends of mermaids come from. In the middle of changing into a fish or something. I don't know. I just, the idea behind this sounded so funny. And so the best way to make it work mechanically, I think, would to be rely on a lot of... So when I thought about this, I was thinking that it would just last until a trigger. So what my thought was is, so they're not falling behind mechanically, that maybe in combat, if you fell asleep, you would just ready your action and set a trigger for it. And then when some trigger happened, your character would wake up and then do it, you know. For instance, with the barbarian, he would charge and fall and tumble in front of somebody. And they say, I'm going to ready my action for somebody that gets close to within my range. And then as soon as he wake up and runs. Shit. He'd wake up and just start swinging wildly and hit somebody. But obviously, you will be giving up a lot of optimization for something like that.
Yeah.
So you could just make it so it's only in roleplay times. But personally, it would be just he wakes up whenever the trigger is sent or on his next turn or something like that. Something so that it's not as mechanically heavy. Or if you're really worried about combat being an issue, just do it at times where combat's not a thing, like climbing up the side of a building or the side of a cliff or something like that.
Here comes Leroy Jenkins.
Oh yeah, it can be kind of risky, but because it's for roleplay purposes, you can determine how you want to play it. Like for me, if I played a character where maybe he falls asleep during conversation only, you could choose that, or you can leave it up to dice and say I'm gonna roll a dice, and whenever it lands on a one, he's gonna fall asleep. You know, maybe that's your nat one failure when you're attacking. Maybe when you roll a nat one, you fall asleep for a few seconds. You know.
Yeah.
Since it's a role play feature, you can really control how serious you want it to be and how. Detailed, and how much of a handicap you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But how hilarious would it be, Joem, if you're in the middle of a game and one of your characters just leaps out of a building to charge and falls asleep halfway through, and you're like, he just splats next to the person. I'm just giggling. You know what? I think I might run this at Joe's game. Because I think it's hilarious. I'll see if he'll let me do that.
I don't know if you saw them, but through all the D&D pages that I like on Facebook, I keep seeing, like, I forget what the webcomic's called, but, like, pages from this one webcomic keep popping up. And, like, they're almost kind of drawn in an almost Calvin and Hobbes style, which makes it even better. But it just is like the misadventures you always see in pretty much any D&D game. But, like, one of them was, like, it's just, like, the wizard was talking to a cleric, and the barbarian was, like, dead in between them. The wizard was like, okay, hear me out. Instead of resurrecting him, how about we reanimate him? Because at least that way, we can get all the combat potential without any of the commentary.
That's funny. And actually, this kind of leads into, you asked me about what my favorite characters are, or character is, and one of those things is, I never play traditional characters, so I end up with shit like this. And to me, that's why I have such a memorable experience in D&D, because I create stupid shit like this that, to me, makes it more roleplay fun than mechanics. Because I did that for a while. I played the optimized character when I was playing Pathfinder, and when I played 3.5, and even when I played 4th edition. In 4th edition is when I started to get away from the traditional, I want to build my character to be combat effective. I want to build my character to be fun and entertaining. And it all usually is.
You know, when we play a side game, I did build a Hexblade, and the only thing, I'm like, you know what, I'm not going to go straight up optimization. I just want this guy to teleport, and that's it.
And you know what? I bet you had a lot of fun with that.
Because his race was an Eladrin? Heck yes.
All right, that is our character concept of the podcast, the Narco Napper. I feel like I should have came up with a better name than that. Our monster variant of the day is Megavarden.
Dun, 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 dun.
The origin is the Shield Guardian. Now, to understand this concept, you have to understand what I was going for. I was very much going for the Voltron or the Megazord style idea, right?
Right.
Since the Shield Guardian's already a construct and everything. So the first thing you have to do is you have to replace his fist with a great sword that's wielded in one hand. Now, the stats are the same.
Yep.
In this condition, so you're not changing anything mechanically except the type of damage. You're going to go from bludgeoning to, what is it, slashing for a greatsword?
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you'd have to remove the bound feature, because the bound feature binds him to a spellcaster. You don't want that shit. You want to get rid of that. Boom, gone. And I did choose to keep the spell stored, and I chose to use Fireball. But I personally, if I use this, I'm going to reflavor it with lightning damage.
Lightning.
That's not really game-breaking at all. Anybody that plays 5e knows it's very light on the damage types, and because of that, you can really get really kind of free with the type of damage you want to do.
Well,
if your DM will do it with you.
Well, unless the damage type is fire.
But anyway, so you would have the spell stored would be Fireball or Lightning Bolt, whichever you want. I chose Fireball personally with lightning damage. And then I changed his shield ability. So instead of his shield giving a protection to his caster that he's defending, instead, when this creature is subjected to an effect that allows it to make a dexterity saving throw to take only half damage, it can use its reaction to take no damage if it succeeded the saving throw, imposing its shield between itself and the source. Does that sound familiar?
Maybe.
That's the Shield Master, part of the Shield Master feat.
Yep.
So instead of trying to boost his AC, because he's already got an AC of 17, but that's not the biggest thing when it comes to survivability, avoiding fireballs and stuff like that is. So basically, kind of increases defenses a little bit. And then the last feature that we gave him is boosters, right? This creature has runes etched onto its back of its shoulders and legs, using lightning blasts that propel it at great speeds. This is reflected in giving it the dodge and disengage action as a bonus action. So this bad boy gets to attack you with his greatsword and dash around the battlefield quickly as possible.
Hey-ha-hoo-ha.
I have almost considered giving him flight, but that seemed like a little much.
That might be overkill.
But that was...
Might.
What do you think about that?
I like giant robots.
Yeah. It's a construct.
Dude, chicks dig giant robots.
Yeah, they do. Man, do you ever watch Magus XLR?
Where do you think I got the phrase from?
That was one of my favorite shows.
And shame it lasted only 2 seasons.
Yeah, it's too bad. It was hilarious. That is our monster variant, the Megavarden.
And today's encounter is Combine and Conquer. And kind of going off of the Power Rangers theme before, you fight 5 constructs. That... Let's just say, just for a conversation, think they might look like, I don't know, lions?
Ooh, lions.
And when nearly defeated, they
suddenly hook up to form one giant mighty construct boss tiger.
Or lion.
Or lion. Form one mighty construct boss lion, like Megavarden, for example, or maybe just a shield guardian.
To me, this is hilarious. You mentioned this some time ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
Or Golem.
Or Golem, yeah, that's a good one. To me, this is a really fun idea because very rarely do you have something that can be as dynamic in a shift as something like this. So the heroes are standing over these constructs. Now, you could just use a regular lion or whatever beastie and just give it the construct things, which is immune to charm and whatever, what all the little stuff that comes with being a construct, and apply that template to these creatures. And then when they're just about defeated or unconscious, right? What if once you knock them all and they're ready, they're getting ready to rest, they feel like they've beat them, they all like shoot into the air and then they all come together, blast together, and now you're fighting a fresh new enemy after you've just burned through a lot of your resources.
Form, fate, and legs.
I almost left it as fist in there and like fist tiger bite or something like that, or lion bite, but that ended up working. So,
and now I'm thinking about the Max XLR episode where he beats up the Power Rangers knockoffs. Because he thought he was a villain.
But the idea is really simple. It starts off with a multi-monster fight and becomes a solo fight when they've expended all the resources. And to me, that's always fun. And this, after you mentioned this, it just sounded awesome. And I've been wanting to put it in here, right? And I kept forgetting. That is our encounter of the podcast, Combine and Conquer. Our magic item of the podcast is Two-Face Shield. A round gold and silver shield with an image of a sun with a face embossed on the front. When the shield is well-maintained and polished to a shine, the embossed face smiles. While smiling, when you take the dodge action, your AC is increased by 1. When the shield becomes filthy, damaged, and is not well-maintained, or even given tender love and care, when you take the dodge action, your AC decreases by 1.
Scrub.
It's a very basic shield. I would almost say it's almost semi-sentient at this point. I consider making it sentient, but and maybe it unlocks later and becomes fully sentient and gets all pissed off at you when you start to block somebody's sword with him. His face is like, ah! No, I wanted something that was interesting that could benefit, because shields are a thing in the game that isn't, they don't go into a lot of depth in like they did previous ones. All shields cause +2, right?
Right.
To the AC. But considering giving another AC bonus is, that's pretty huge in this one. So I wanted to find a way to give them an additional bonus to it in certain circumstances. And taking the dodge action is one of the tankiest things you can do.
It is.
Because you impose disadvantage on all attacks against you. So then increasing your AC by a little bit is really nice as well. What do you kind of think about this?
It's situational, but... And I'm pretty sure somebody has to keep track of how well you're maintaining the shield. But other than that, though...
It could be as simple as... If the DM says, did you clean your shield? I just think it'd be hilarious that the roleplay that could lead to. Because, wait, guys. Somebody got a rag? I got to clean her up. I got to polish her nice and scrub her teeth and give her a nice shot. Spit on there and shining her up.
Is that a euphemism?
Sure. Whatever you think. That that is our... Of course, if it gets really nasty and you're trying to hide behind it and it's like... not becoming functional at all. It's like yelling at you or something. I almost wish I would have made it more sentient.
Hey, Jack Wagon, claim me.
That is our magic item of the podcast, the Two-Face Shield.
And next on deck, we have the Dungeon Master's Tip. Give your players an opportunity to create their own magic items.
Now, there's rules for making magic items in the game, but that's not something you have to abide by, you know? When we think magic items, these things are crafted traditionally just by somebody with magic doing something, but often the creation of very legendary weapons are tied to some magnificent feat, right, that they've done. For instance, if, you know, you wanted to get, your character's been questing to try to get a firebrand, right? Or a lightning weapon or something. And you could task them with, okay, you've had this guy craft this sword for you. He says it's got a powerful enchantment on it. To complete the process, in order for it to become a lightning sword, you need to bathe it in the lightning breath of, like, a dragon.
Son of a...
So you can actually put their craft, instead of following the traditional crafting, you can put their ability to create in their hands. They can decide, okay, I have to get this weapon enchanted by putting it in the breath weapon of an ancient dragon. Well, that's easier said than done. So traditionally, you'll think, I got to go fight this to do it. But maybe you make a bargain. You strike a bargain with the dragon.
Okay, dragon, I don't know how to explain this, but I need you to breathe on me.
I would like my weapon to become imbued with the awesomeness that is you. What will it take for you to do this? I can just see a big dragon just covering one snout and shooting lightning out of his nostril.
But kind of going off of this concept, though, where you basically create the weapons through feats, like, what is that I can think of off the top of my head is, like, in Berserk, Guts' sword was actually able to strike, like, astral creatures, just because he slaughtered so many demons, and the sword became so caked in their blood over a period of time, just, like, it was became magical because it killed so many magical creatures.
Oh, that is cool. That is awesome. It's very much something like that, so, and it could be something that they're unaware of, you know what I mean?
Okay. Or maybe a spirit possesses a suit of plate mail, creating a sort of berserker armor.
Ooh.
Because it's a vengeance spirit of some kind.
Yeah, so you sometimes lose control of it, and it increases, like, your attack power or something.
Something.
That's really cool. The goal here is that magic items don't have to be just something they find. It can be something that they're heavily involved in creating. Whether, in this case, we talked about swords, but a piece of armor could do the same thing. If you, in order, you want to get a piece of elemental resistance armor where it resists the different elements, so now you have to bathe it in the weapon of the breath weapon of a dragon, or you have to take it to Mount Doom and lower it into the fiery pit belly of it and pull it out to get resistance to fire. You know, helping them do that creates not only quests, but it creates interesting pieces of gear that they'll want to wear.
Okay, the good news is I finished the gauntlet of regeneration here. Yeah, but what's the bad news? Well, the bad news is you kind of need troll blood to activate it.
Do we know where a troll is? Yeah, they're in the Trolling Woods. Okay, well, let's go there. Do you have any idea how dangerous those things are? But it'll create a sort of attachment to those weapons and those pieces of equipment, more so than if they just buy it or they find it.
Yeah.
So that's our Dungeon Master tip of the podcast. Give your players the opportunity to create their own magic items through feats.
And for our player tip, don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by...
S to customize spell effects to fit a theme.
So I just talked about this briefly, probably because it was already in here. Just because a certain spell works a certain way, changing the element to fit a theme or a character concept you want isn't totally out of the bag. Now, there's going to be some DMs that are going to be, that fireball is fire and that's it, asshole. You're not changing it to gold. You're not changing it to acid. You're not changing it to anything else. It's fireball for you.
Although, if you make it in some cases where a character can only cast spells of that element,
right,
that has the pluses and minuses too.
Right. I mean, there's trades off for each way. But for instance, I talked about it before. I wanted to play a character like Iceman or Elsa, where it was all my spells were ice, but there was like two spells.
Dude, let go.
I can't believe you beat me to that. that was good. There wasn't enough to build around the concept that I wanted, and make my character functional. And so I worked with the DM, and I changed several things. My Firebolt became Frostbolt. Literally, the only difference is the damage type.
Yep.
And while it does overcome some weaknesses and some strengths, it's a trade-off regardless. The DM controls what he throws at you. So if you want your character to shine because you've chosen to do ice, then he'll do that. If he wants you to be punished for it, he'll do that. You know. So it shouldn't affect... It doesn't affect the game now nearly as much as it used to, at least from my gaming experience.
Especially if you take that one feat that basically negates resistance.
Right, right. There you go.
Not immunity, resistance.
Is that Spell Sniper that does that?
I don't think it's Spell Sniper, but...
Well, whatever. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But what it comes down to is trying to customize your character to a level that makes it that much more unique. Because if... Everyone can pick a wizard. Everyone can pick an evocation wizard. If I want to be an evocation wizard, that's all lightning, because my guy's name is Thunder. Right? I mean...
And let's face it, most common element, as we said before, was fire, so what kind of nice to give some other elements some love?
Yeah, that's for that's a good point. But once again, I mean, there's not very many like level one like cantrip lightning bolts, you know?
Nope.
Doesn't fit the theme, you know. I'm gonna use Firebolt. I do 1d10. When was the last time you used Firebolt and it made a difference? I think at least in my experience, the only time it make a difference is you won't be able to light something on fire if it's a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Or a cold thing. And I'd probably tell the player, okay, I'll let make it cold, but it's not gonna light anything on fire. Right? So anyways, that'll give your characters a unique theme and a unique fit. Talk to your DM about it. If you want to play like Elsa or you want to play like Raiden from Mortal Kombat, ask them. The worst they're going to do is you're going to be in the same situation. They're going to say no.
Or Banshee from X-Men.
Yeah, and if you're that's a good one. And if you're the DM listening to this, that's got the freaking storage shoved up your ass that is so uptight about this shit, let it go, man. Don't be saying it. Now, there's no wrong way to play the game, but come on, man. Really?
It's like, I get it. But at the same time, know what I mean?
And Joma singing, let it go, let it go. Don't hold me back anymore.
Have you read the comic Looking for a Group?
No, you always ask me that.
Okay.
I don't read comics anymore.
Okay.
I did read The Killing Joke recently, like a year ago.
They tried to get a project off the ground where they were trying to make a movie off the webcomic, but it never quite took off, but... They did make a video trailer, if you will, of the party warlock Richard singing the song "Slaughter Your World," which was set to the beat of "Part of Your World."
Slaughter Your World. There was a song that I sang during one of our games. Do you remember what it was? It was "Slaver Bells." I think is what was called. We were traveling. It was when you were traveling between was it Waterdeep and Greenest?
Something. But currently I'm picturing Richard singing "Let It Burn."
Let it burn, let it burn.
There's
gonna melt your flesh anyway.
The screams never bothered me anyway.
That's fucking funny.
But that's our player tip for the podcast for today.
Don't be a dick. And you can avoid dickitude by customizing your spell effects to fit a theme. Yeah, there you go.
Cha-chow.
And actually, kind of to jump off that, some stuff can be changed without changing it, just the way it looks visually.
Ooh, Gaara from Naruto.
Oh, dude. That's awesome. So, like, all your attacks are sand-based?
Yeah.
Oh, that is cool.
Oh. You want to do it now, don't you?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Instead of, firebolt, it's, like, sandbolt. Or just like a little spear of sand.
Or Toph.
I love Toph. The blind bandit is my favorite. When she's fighting the boulder, says, "The boulder is going to win by a landslide." Ha ha ha, whatever, pebble.
Get
the pebble.
I actually still love the old Toph from Legend of Korra.
I actually couldn't get into Legend of Korra, so I had to make it past the first, few episodes.
You met old Toph.
Did I?
I don't remember. No. In the show, you meet old Toph. It's hilarious.
I thought she was dead, because old lady that does the metal bending is there. That's like her daughter, but she's like 80 years old.
No, Toph is still alive, and you meet her, and she's actually grouchier than ever.
I love Toph. Alright, so I think that does it for the show.
So you met Aang? What was it like to teach him earthbending? What is there to tell? All he did was complain, and it's like I fell in the hole.
I love that. That's funny. So I think that does it for our show today.
Before we close out our show for today, we have one more gift to give away from Jeff Stevens.
It's been a long few days of travel, and the adventurers are tired of eating rations and sleeping on the ground. The road opens to a small town with an inviting tavern. The smells of grilling meat and ale fill their nostrils, and the sound of laughter and music float out the tavern's door. Unlucky for the adventurers, they've stumbled upon Dragon's Breath Tavern. What starts out as a pleasant evening of food, drink, and entertainment soon evolves into an adventure that takes the party into and under Dragon's Breath Tavern. The adventure includes roleplay, exploration, combat, and a dice game called Demon Dice.
Today's winner is M. Schmitz. When it comes
So I guess actually that would make it M. Smith. Smitch.
M. Smits.
Hey, Joan, you haven't even been close to experienced the pleasure.
Oh, good lord.
You have no idea what I'm capable of. Ooh, yeah.
All right. And to our listeners, please join us on our next episode when we hear feedback from our heroes. And we will discuss the next class, archetypes, listed in Xanathar's Guide to Everything, the Fighter.
That was really good.
Yeah.
If you have any feedback, unearth tips and tricks, or topics you'd like us to discuss, please send them to us. You can email us at critacademy@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at Crit Academy.
And we hope you've enjoyed your experience here at the Crit Academy. If you did, you can help others find the show by leaving a, hopefully, 5-star review on iTunes or your platform of choice. Or you can just send us a message telling us how much you enjoy the show.
Tell me how awesome I am. Also, be sure to leave a like and a share. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your host, Ian.
Thanks for listening.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.
And today's episode has been brought to you by Druidic Husbandry. Trust us, do not think about that one too hard.
What the fuck?